So I grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm also Jewish, and yes, there are Jews in Chattanooga. There are four temples, or there were when I was growing up. And, you know, we were very Jewish in many ways. We had all the observations of the tradition. You know, there was Yiddish spoken with a southern accent, but it was spoken. And there was that inappropriate Jewish humor that I think we all know very well. That was very much part of our life. But we were also very southern. My whole family, except for me, I swear, still talks with a southern accent. I lost mine because I did theater and I moved up north. So there's the southern accent. And then there's just this thing where, like, you don't rock the boat. It's all about appearances, and you always want to present. You got to look good. Doesn't matter what's going on inside. You got to look good. And, you know, you just always want to sort of be that person who people want you to be. And it's not something I really like about my tradition, but it's definitely very evident if you look at my family. And it became very clear to me when I was looking back at my parents' divorce. In 1985, I was 11, and my brother was 8, and we found out my parents would be separating. And, you know, of course we were devastated. And I know my parents were really devastated, but nobody was more devastated than my grandparents because, oh my God, what were they going to do with their single, you know, divorcee daughter with two children? It was beyond, like, I know they were worried about her, like, who was going to change the light bulb or take care of things in the house, but there was also sort of like, how do we introduce her? How do we tell people about the divorce? And their solution was actually a good one, if you think about it. They're like, well, let's just get her remarried as soon as possible. And then it won't be an issue. No one will know. New people won't know. We won't have to get into it. Everybody else will forget. And, you know, my mom was gorgeous when she was in her 30s. Stunning. She still is, thanks to Dr. Cho. But back then, she was, like, beautiful. And she had no problem attracting men. But as soon as they found out there was, you know, a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old at that point, it was like a deal breaker. So she would kind of fall for these guys, and we'd think it was going to work out, and then he would just kind of fizzle off. And, you know, I felt sort of bad. We kind of knew what the problem was. But, you know, she was obviously dedicated to us, thank God. And, you know, there was one guy she fell in love with named Gus, who was not Jewish, and so he didn't go very far because that wouldn't look good. And, you know, she just kind of played the field for a couple years, and that was very normal for our family. I would go to Nanny and Grandpa's, and she'd go to a convention, you know, Jewish singles convention, or somebody's nephew would come to town, and she was a really good sport, really charming. And, you know, a couple years into this, 3 years into this, I go away to summer camp, Camp Ramah, and she writes me a postcard saying, this weekend I'm going up to see my sister, Aunt Dana, and she's going to fix me up with someone. Keep your fingers crossed. And, you know, I was at camp with my own summer intrigue, so that just kind of went over my head. I was like, whatever. About a week and a half later, I get another postcard from her that says, I met Andy. He is wonderful. We had the best time. We spent the whole weekend together, and he's coming to Chattanooga to visit Nanny and Grandpa, meet Nanny and Grandpa. And then I was kind of like, oh, wow, that's kind of big. Okay. But, you know, went back to camp and my own romances. And then about a week and a half later, toward the end of camp, I get a postcard that said, Andy came to Chattanooga and he proposed. I accepted. Don't worry, you're going to love him. And at that point, I was like, what the fuck? You know, like, I'm 14, but I was old enough to know you don't get engaged to someone that you've known for 3 weeks. You know, that's crazy. And she didn't ask my permission. Like, this was going to be my stepdad. I needed to have a say in this. So I was a wreck about it. I mean, I came home from camp, and everybody, my grandparents loved him. My brother said he was cool. Even my dad had met him and said, he's a really good guy. You're going to like him. So I kind of calmed down, and I met him. And honestly, when I met him, I loved him instantly. He was warm. He was easy to talk to. He was from New York. And at that point, I'd really outgrown the southern thing. So I was like, yes, you know, northern blood in the family. And so quickly, I kind of forgot about the three-week thing, and I was on board. And, you know, in less than a year, we had moved to Norfolk, Virginia, where he had a job, and we were all living together as a family. And, you know, that can get complicated, as we know. And it wasn't very long into it that things were really bad, actually. There were problems between my brother and my stepdad and my uncle and my stepdad and the mother-in-law. It was a mess. And there was all these things that I didn't even know about, I'm sure, behind closed doors. And I kind of figured something was really bad when I heard my mom muttering, I should have known when he was in his mid-30s and never been married, there was a problem. And I was like, oh. But by this point, I was settled. My brother was settled. And, you know, we asked her, like, well, are you going to get divorced? And she wouldn't even entertain the idea. Like, it was not even an option. No more divorce for her. So, you know, they stayed married for a long time. And things were up and down, but it was kind of clear over the years that it wasn't really the best marriage. They had kind of a shtick they do. They had a lot of friends, and I think they hung out with people to sort of avoid time with each other. So they had this shtick where they would just sort of, like, pick at each other and it would make us all kind of uncomfortable. But it was obvious, like, there were problems. And whenever my brother and I over the years brought up divorce, it was just like, no, don't even go there. So fast forward to the year 2009, in March, and my mom and stepdad are entertaining. My mom makes this huge pot of Brunswick stew, and they have a lovely night, apparently. My mom goes to sleep, and when she wakes up in the morning, my stepdad hadn't come to bed. And she goes into the living room, and she sees he's on the couch asleep. And then she realizes, she got a little closer, she said, I got the chills. And I realized, actually, you know, something was wrong. And I went and touched him, and he was cold. And he had died. He'd had a massive heart attack at age 57, and he was gone. And by this point, he was one of my favorite people in the world. So I was devastated, and really everyone in the community was devastated. It was horrible. And my mom was in absolute shock. He had had a heart attack like a year before, not even a year, but we didn't think that like another one was going to come that quickly. And it was very shocking for all of us. And I remember being in my mom's room the night before the funeral and just saying, you know, Mom, I love you, and I'm just so sorry about this. And because I know she did love him. You know, you can't be with someone that long and not love them. And my mom was in shock, and I think she'd taken an Ativan, and, you know, she was kind of out of it. And she just gave me this look, you know, this sort of like, I'd never seen this look in her eye. It was like this knowing look, but this tiny hint of glee. And she looked at me and she said, don't you worry about a thing, honey. Your mom's going to be just fine. And I was like, okay, you know, and actually she was, because she'd gone from, it was 2009, right after the recession had started, and they were having a really hard time. They were both in sales, and so they were struggling financially, and suddenly she got this infusion of cash, and she wasn't worried about things anymore, and she'd never lived alone in her whole life. She'd always lived with someone, so now she could do what she wanted. She went on Mahjong cruises, she got a facelift, and she finally kind of got to be, you know, not in a relationship that wasn't working, but she didn't have to go through a divorce. So she was extracted from it in kind of a way that, you know, was socially acceptable and looked, you know, looked okay. And, you know, so whatever. Okay, so now there's this joke in our family that when someone is mad at their husband, to make another person feel better, one of the women will just suggest very slyly, perhaps you need to make him a pot of Brunswick stew. Thank you.